Now, to catch our visitors up to speed, last couple of weeks, and this will be our last night for this particular discussion, but the last couple of weeks, we've talked about the difference between holy days, holidays, and those other kind of days. And no, I'm not going to say it again. That was a one-night deal just to make our point. I grew up, holidays for me and my family were like you saw on the Waltons, on Leave It to Beaver, on Ozzie and Harriet. I was blessed beyond anything, of course, I ever deserved, but just blessed beyond most people. It was the kind of thing where we looked forward to it. It was going to be lots of good food, lots of good fun. It was just, we couldn't wait to get together. My family is still much that way. But in this room, and that's what we're talking about, I'm not talking about anybody anywhere else but here, in this room, there are people who didn't have it that way. And so while it's right for us to thank God for good times from the past, good memories from the past, it's also right for us to remember that other folks don't always have that. There are folks sitting in this room, and I don't know all the visitors, but I'm the ones that aren't visitors, I know you. We've talked. Some of you were hurt by family. There's been issues of abuse and things. Others have been rejected by family. There are people in this room who have been hurt by the people that they have to spend the holidays with. So holidays for them are not special. Holidays for them almost cause more anxiety and more pain than they bring joy. That's the truth of it. So what we started trying to do a few weeks ago is start thinking, how do we prepare ourselves to face family? Now, for some of you, you grew up treating this holiday like a holy day, where your family would maybe go to church on Christmas or Christmas Eve, and you would go out caroling, and you would remember the birth of Jesus with certain pageants and things, and you considered it a holy day. God bless you. I'm telling you, I love anytime anybody spends thinking about Jesus, I'm all for. Aren't you? Others of us, though, didn't treat it much like a holy day, but it was a holiday. It was a good time to get together, and you got to eat and swap presents and that kind of thing. But others of us suffered. It was time of anxiety. It's time of heartache. And I got to thinking, how do we prepare ourselves for that? Well, if hold your finger in Proverbs, but go back to the verse that's the basis for what this whole approach to this. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. If you look at verses 5 and 6. 2 Corinthians 10, 5 and 6. Now, we're going to give everybody a chance to get there, because we've got some guys that are just getting started in our Bible study, so it's kind of hard to find 2 Corinthians sometimes. Now, if you've got the giant print Jesus Bible like I do, it's on page 1785. All right? He said, our weapons, look at verse 3, he says, for though we live in the world, we do not wage war as the world does. That's been our introduction every week. Every week. So, remind me. We live in the world, but we're not going to fight like the world fights. How does the world fight? Now, some of us will answer this from theory. We are very philosophical, and we've been very deep in our thinking and very spiritual, and we will have had ascertained that they fight dirty. And others of us have lived through it and know this without having any theory. How does the world fight? What do they use in a family? What do they use in relationships to hurt the other? Well, we've talked about sarcasm, we've talked about anger, we've talked about using guilt, we've talked about manipulation, we've talked about lying, we've talked about gossip, we've talked about all those complaining, criticism, and those, again, one more time, that teasing, it's not really teasing. We've talked about that, and that's how some of your families are. Some people sitting in this room are not excited about going back for the holiday. They're not looking forward to seeing mom and dad and grandma, grandpa, aunts and uncles and cousins and brothers and sisters because they've not been treated well. And sometimes that's our fault, and sometimes it's their fault. But we got to learn not to fight like they fight. So what we looked at is we wanted to fight with those things that will demolish the strongholds. Now, what were the two strongholds? This is a review again. What were the strongholds?
Arguments
and pretensions. And both of those put us in danger. I'll say it this way without having to push you for review, because it's Wednesday night and you've worked hard, and so I'm going to let you rest a minute. Some of us keep a constant argument going all the time inside you. You've got a constant argument. Sometimes that argument is against yourself. And you're, you know, what you did wrong, and you've always been wrong, and no wonder nobody likes you, and I know they're going to bring this up, and I've gained weight, so they're going to say I'm fat, or I've lost my hair, and they're going to say I'm bald. You start the argument, and you keep it going. And don't tell me you don't. I love you. I know you. And we've talked about this, some of you. But some of you, when y'all leave your family, or you even leave church, you go home, and all the way home you're thinking, well, next time they say this, and then I'm going to say that, and then if they say this, I'm going to say, you keep the argument going. And so you keep primed for the moment somebody asks a question, makes a comment, immediately you're ready. You get defensive, and you get tacky, and you want to, you're always kind of rebutting their position. Well, sometimes we go to the other extreme, though. And we don't argue about ourselves, we argue about them. And we always think about, well, they're wrong, and they did this, and next time they do this, then I'm going to do this back. And we almost plot a course, if she says this, then I'll say that. And the best one I heard was, somebody did, they looked at it, told this guy, said, man, you've gotten fat since I saw you last. He said, yeah, but one of these days I'll lose mine, but you're ugly and you ain't never going to change that. Now, I'm not promoting that approach, but that's what I hear sometimes. Well, that's what we do. We keep the argument alive. That drama is going to turn any holiday into that other kind of day, right? So you don't want to go there. So we don't fight that way. We want to demolish those arguments. On the other side is the pretension. And it has two sides to it. It has a positive and a negative. Sometimes the pretension is on our part. We see ourselves. We're the ones that are always right. Have you ever lost an argument? I'm telling you, I hear people talk all the time. You've never lost an argument. Well, I told her that I told him that I told her. She told me that I told them. And you're always the hero. You're always right. It is amazing when you're always right that people don't see that. I've wondered it for years, right? But on the flip side of that pretension is sometimes you won't acknowledge that your family's messed up. Well, she's my mother. Well, I'm glad she's your mother, and God bless your mother. But if your mother is a jerk, she's a jerk. Right? If you can't acknowledge, if you pretend like, oh, well, she's my mother and she wouldn't do anything to hurt me, that's how you get in situations where you can't protect yourself. So we've got to demolish arguments and we've got to demolish pretensions. Now, how do we do that? And we talked about a bunch of that over the last few weeks. But here's what he says. He said, with the knowledge of God, not your impulses, not your actions or reactions, but with the knowledge of God, what do? You take those thoughts captive. Folks, to take anything captive is going to take work. We don't like... I'm a counselor, so I see this a lot. We don't like to work. Especially it means working internally here. We don't like to do the work that we have to do because what we want to do is be able to react and let our reaction be the standard of all everybody else's reactions. And our experience should be what everybody else understands. Rather than us understanding their experiences, we want them to accept ours. I'm telling you, we've got to, according to the knowledge of God, you've got to take that thought captive. You get a hold of that thought and you take it to Jesus and say, Jesus, what do you think about this? And let Jesus vote on how you ought to act or how you ought to react. What you ought to say or what you ought to not say. Right? Okay, so I tried to make it tonight, since this is the tie the knot night, a lot of this will be repetition, but I want to try and make it real simple. I just did an A, B, C, D, E, all right? A, and I'm going to try to give you two sides to both so you get a positive and a negative look at it. On A, one of those is you got to accept them for who they are, where they are, what they are. Okay? Accept your family because that's what you want them to do with you. Why don't you just accept me for what I am? And most of the people I hear say that are not accepting the people that aren't accepting them. Well, I'm not going to accept them because they didn't accept me. That works well, doesn't it? No, it's not how they accept you that determines how you accept them. Let's talk real plain, okay? Some of us in this room grew up with alcoholic parents, okay? We grew up with alcoholic parents. If you grew up with an alcoholic parent, whether you like to admit it or not, it affected you. It affected the way you deal with life. And it, in turn, affects the way you treat other people. Now, you may not see that, may not think that's right. I'm telling you it is right. It's just the way it is. If you grew up in a home where there was mental illness, you are affected by that. Doesn't mean you're mentally ill. Doesn't mean you twitch, though some of you do. It doesn't mean that. What it means is, folks, is that you've been affected by that. The experiences of your life have been affected. They've been clouded. They've been, wrong word to use, but they've been warped by those examples. So if you've got a mom, not taking it up for her, just explaining my point. If you've got a mom or a dad that was raised by an alcoholic, count on them being more controlling than you want them to be. Okay, now you understand, it is the purpose of children to try to throw off the controls of parents. Always has been. That's why you wanted to touch the stove when your mama said no. And in your little baby brain, you started early on saying, you're just trying to control me. Yes, you little twit, because if you don't, you're going to hurt yourself. But of course, when you're 35, 43, 58, and mom's still trying to do it, at some point you better just accept the fact that your mom is going to be that way. Now, does that mean you approve it? No. Does that mean that you agree? No. Does that mean that you don't have a right to say, Mom, I'm going to touch the stove, whether you like it or not? Yes, you have that right. But you start with just accepting it. Just accept that's who they are. And guess what, folks?
You can't change.
Say it again.
You can't change.
One more time.
You can't change them.
So quit making that your job. Especially, I'm going home for the holidays, I'm going to fix mom and dad. No, you're not. I'm going home for the holiday, I'm going to fix my sister and my brother. No, you're not. Well, I'm going to fix my entire family. No, you're not. More than one of you have sat in my office and we've talked about your family tree, and I've got on my little board, my little whiteboard, and I've drawn out the family little tree so you can see kind of how it works. And some of you have looked at it and said, man, my family's messed up. And some of you have used other words more graphic than that. And I've agreed with you every time. Yep, you're right. What you want to do is you see that and you start wanting to fix them. You can't fix them. Guess what? You got to fix you. So first you accept them. That's who they are. Now the second part of that accept probably is maybe the polar opposite of it, is there are some things, some people you need to avoid. I said it. I'm going to say it again. Avoid. Some of us growing up in church were taught it, well, I don't know that anybody ever taught us this, but a lot of us learned it as if we were being taught that if we are Christians, then it doesn't matter how anybody treats us, we just have to let them keep treating us that way. No, 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 no. Jesus said it. Do not cast your pearls before swine. Do not give what is sacred to the dogs. Now, who's saying that?
Jesus.
This is the Prince of Peace, y'all, saying. In fact, you know what his red letters were right before he said those red letters? Judge not that you be not judged. And we heard that so much without understanding it, without insight, without teaching, we were taught that you can't say that anybody's doing anything wrong to you or anything they're doing anything wrong. No, you just have to put up with it. No, he said, the next verse says, Don't cast your pearls before swine. Don't give what is sacred to the dogs. You know what that means you're required by Jesus to do? Identify the dogs. Identify the pigs. And avoid them. Now here's where my point a minute ago comes in. If your dad is a pig, you have a right by God's own word to avoid him. If your mom is a dog, I'm not talking about how she looks in the morning. All right. If your mom is a dog, you have a right to avoid her. Now, we're sitting here in church and y'all are going, can you talk? Can you say those things in church? Jesus said it. And it's always right to agree with Jesus. Always right to agree with Jesus. And some of you talk to somebody like me about those things and I think, what are you talking about? You're just way out there, buddy. People sitting in this room know what I'm talking about. There's some of you that know exactly what I mean. You have put yourself at risk with your dad. You put yourself at risk with your mom. And you have hurt, you've allowed them to damage you, either physically or emotionally. You do not have to do that. Do you understand? Well, they're my mama. I know she's your mama, but she does not have the right to make you feel less than what God made you to be. One more time. Nobody, not even your mom and daddy. Did Santa come early? You have the right. Nobody has the right to make you feel less than what God made you to be. You have a right to avoid and to keep sacred away from the dogs and the pigs. Enough said. That's the A. B is real simple. Be prepared. And that be prepared works on both sides too. You be prepared to guard your heart. Be prepared to protect your soul. You're talking to me and I'm looking at, if you're talking to me and I'm looking at my mom and dad, I'm thinking, I don't have to protect myself from them at all. They are the best people in my life, always have been. In the times when I've had the worst time, when I've been at the most damaged time of my life, they were at their best. I believe they are just beyond equal of anybody I've ever met as far as accepting and loving and forgiving and supporting and raising and encouraging kids. They're the best. That's the way you're supposed to feel, I guess. But some of you don't have that experience. So I'm telling you, since there are dogs and pigs out there, and sometimes they're kin to you, what you got to do is be prepared to protect yourself. I love what Peter taught us. Do you remember? We did this when we read Peter together. That First Peter, that letter. What did he say? Prepare your minds for action. You know what your family is going to be like. In fact, you've sat in my office and us talked about it sometimes. You said, well, when I go home, my mom's going to say this, my dad's going to do that. Guess what? If you already know it, be prepared for it. Practice. What are you going to say? Practice. What are you going to do? Well, you know that brother's going to mention something. Well, then prepare yourself. Practice a little speech. All right? Now, because if you don't, what happens? If you're not prepared, what happens? I do it all the time driving. Do it all the time driving. If I see somebody trying to get out of a parking lot, there's a long line of cars at a stoplight, and I see some poor fellow wanting to pull out here and get across traffic, I can prepare myself and do what? I can let him in. I can stop, wave to him. And if I do, he should give me a courtesy wave because that's nice. If not, ram him. And then, no, that's not. But you can prepare yourself to do that. But if he doesn't, if I'm not prepared for that, and he cuts in front of me, makes me slam on my brakes, how do I feel about that? My reaction is much different. Well, it's not mine, but I know some of y'all might react differently. That's the way it is at home. If you're prepared, if you know you've got a brother who is going to be hateful, who's going to be sarcastic, who's going to be tacky, prepare yourself. And prepare how you're going to respond to that. Now, my suggestion is, well, not my suggestion, Jesus' suggestion is, when somebody's insulting, what does Jesus suggest when somebody's insulting? When somebody hits you on the right cheek, and that's an insult, folks, the guy's not punching you. A right hand hits the right cheek when he's slapping you back in. It's an insult. That's the idea. When he hits you on the right cheek, you... In other words, you don't react. Because if you do, somebody's being real hateful. Somebody's being real angry. And they're getting on you. And you come back at them with anger and sarcasm. What happens? Oh, I didn't know you felt that way. And that stops, right? No, you're feeding the beast. When you respond with anger, when you respond with sarcasm, it just gets worse. So be prepared ahead of time. Do you know? Don't you know? And you could probably, and we could do it in here if we wanted to. We won't. But we could say, now what's his name? What's her name? You're going to come into Christmas and you're going to bring some dish that you make and you really like it. You think it's just wonderful. And there's somebody else there that thinks theirs is better than yours. And there's going to be some sister-in-law. And it's always an in-law, isn't it? In-law says, oh, you brought that again this year? And she didn't say it was nasty. She didn't say it made her throw up. What she said was, you brought that again this year? And she made no comment about it. She didn't criticize it. She just asked you the question. But in your heart, what did she say? That's the nastiest stuff. Why'd you bring that garbage in here? So what do?
Punch your novel.
And you've been wearing your husband out for weeks. When she tells me that, I'm going to tell her. And he's going, oh, we hear this again. No. Prepare yourself. She says, yes, because I knew you loved it. And I brought this in a dish so you can take it home with you. And don't say at the end of that sentence, pig or dog. That's not nice, all right? The point is you be prepared for it. You know it's going to happen, so you prepare yourself for it. I'm going to get now more serious. If you know there's somebody there that's going to hurt you, well, I'd suggest that you avoid them altogether and stay gone. Lonely alone is better. Listen to me. Is better than lonely in a room full of family. Lonely alone is better than feeling lonely in the middle of your family. Right? I've heard people tell me that. And I've experienced it in some other ways, never with family, but I've experienced it with churches. And I'm telling you, lonely alone is better than lonely in the middle of your family. If somebody's going to hurt you, stay away from them. But if you can't stay away from them, if you're just one of those, well, I just couldn't do that. I don't know why you couldn't. But if you can't, then be prepared to protect yourself from them. But also be prepared, and you're going to hear this point every time almost, be prepared to be the opposite. I watch folks, watch them all the time, worry about some situation happening, and then it doesn't happen. And guess, more often than not, you know what they'll do? They'll make it happen. They'll say something. They'll whisper something. They'll do something to trigger it because that's what they've been saying all along. Well, you know, I know what's going to happen. Well, no, you don't know what's going to happen. Really, you don't know what's going to happen. And sometimes you get yourself so keyed up for the drama, when the drama doesn't happen, you do something to create the drama. Be prepared to be the kind of person that you want to be. Practice it. I'm serious. Practice it. We act like living a life of a Christian, you just wake up and it just happens. I woke up this morning and I'm a Christian. I'm like Jesus today. If you have that gift, please show me how you got it, because I don't get it. You know what I got to do? I got to get up in the morning and think, okay, now I got to get this figured out. Today, when I go into that office, don't get me started talking about my office. But when I got to prepare myself, and when I prepare myself, I got to think in terms of what I'm going to say and what I'm going to do. And not just in reacting to people, but being like Jesus. So when you walk in, and I'm a big believer in this deal. I saw it first in church. I have not seen it in my family, but I've seen it. Well, I have seen it some in my family, extended family, but I've seen it in church a lot. Somebody walks into church,
And they're, you know what they're waiting on? Somebody to say hi to them. You know why? Because somebody doesn't say hi to them, you know what it means? I knew about her. I knew what he was like. Because I walked in there and he didn't even say hi to me. I walked in there and she didn't even say hi to me. Yes, I know what she's doing. I know what he's doing. I used to hear it all the time. So, well, sister so-and-so didn't say hi to me. I didn't know any better. When I used to be a preacher and I was a young guy, my first question was always, what did you say hi to her? They were offended. Well, no, because she's not going to talk to me. I'm not going to talk to her. Well, how's that work for you? That helps, doesn't it? So try, in fact, there'd be sometimes there's family of mine, I'd just soon not talk to me. But practice. Be kind. And stop being that sarcastic, hateful, manipulative person you've been. Not you. We wouldn't do that, right? That's everybody else that does it. No, we be prepared to be like Jesus. All right? Now the C. A is accept and avoid. B is be prepared to protect yourself and be prepared to be like Jesus. C is change the focus of the moment. Change the focus of the moment. Someone says to you, it looks to me like you've gained a lot of weight, Rex. Change the focus. What you do is you say, thank you. And you can use different, you really can do different things. You can start sobbing immediately. And that changes the focus of the argument immediately. Or you can use humor. And I love to use humor. Because I'll say, thank you, where are the Oreos? But then rather than being tacky back, because that's what we want to do, you change the focus of the argument by complimenting them. Oh, yes, I have gained a lot of weight. And I have, so why not be honest about it? I've gained a lot of weight. But man, I like that shirt you're wearing. Wouldn't fit this old fat boy, but I like that shirt. Change the focus. Change the focus toward a positive instead of a negative. Does that make sense? Change the focus. Don't keep it down on you. Turn it on positive on them. Now, I know it's going to hurt your feelings. Yes, it's going to hurt your feelings. It's hard for it not to hurt your feelings. But listen, you're going to live through it. So hurt feelings don't kill you. So try to be nice to them. Change the focus. Don't be negative. Be positive. Be kind. Be good. So if the focus of the moment is critical, and there's some family, have you ever been in, you can see it in any family, but have you ever been around some families where nothing's right? Nothing's right? And honest, sometimes it's the ladies that do the cooking. These old potatoes, they're just not done. This old turkey, it sure is dry. These old beans, they sure are green. I don't know. So it sets a negative kind of thing. Quit that. Are you glad to have food? I tell you what, we got some folks in here who know what it's like not to have enough to eat. We got some folks that have had some out in the cold, nothing to eat kind of days. And what does any kind of meal taste like?
Like a gourmet meal.
It does, doesn't it, Roger? Point is, guys, be kind, be positive. Take that focus that's negative, that may be directed towards you. Not leave it there. Change that focus. Change it toward a positive. Find something good to say to them. Find a way to say something nice. Well, that's just not the way we do it in our family. Well, maybe it's about time. Maybe it is about time for somebody in your family to start being like Jesus. Why don't you try it? One of the things, and a simple way to try it, is do it with the children. You know how you break the cycle in any generation? Start with the children. They're the easiest to change. Jesus broke it, was tired. He was sitting down trying to rest. Mama saw Jesus there, had their little kids. So let's go over here and see Jesus. Disciples. No, he's tired. We hadn't let those children, because what does children mean? Children are meant to be seen, not heard, right? Please. In this place, you got to be kidding me. But they brought the children to him. They brought the children to him. And what did he do? Do you remember the three things he did? The three things he did. You could change your whole family perspective. Now, I'm not talking about changing your family, but you could change the focus of your family by doing exactly what Jesus did with the children. You know what he did? It says he received them. He accepted them. It was 100 years ago. My son was about 3-4 years old. It's March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. I don't remember that it's St. Patrick's Day. I don't celebrate St. Patrick's Day. On my way to church. He's in the back seat. Reaches up and pinches a plug out of me. Because I'm not wearing green. I said, "Whoa, boy, what are you doing?" He said, "It's St. Patrick's Day and you're not wearing something green." And I said, "Stop that. You're acting like a little kid." He said, in a minute I heard from the back seat, he said, "Dad, I am a little kid." I learned a valuable lesson. They're little kids. Guess what little kids are going to do? They're going to do whatever they can get by with. I love this place. I do. I love this place, and I love how different we are in things. Me growing up in church, if we wanted to get a drink of water, my mother said, "You better get it before church starts. Because you don't get up, you're going to use the bathroom, you better use it before church starts. Because once church starts, you don't get up." Then there were other kids. Clinton's mom let him get up and go get a drink. Go to the bathroom anytime. I don't know if he can make it to heaven after that. I don't know. But he would get up right during the preacher's preaching. Right while the preacher's preaching, he'd get up and go to the bathroom. And I think, "Oh, I thought something was wrong with that." And then I came, and of course we do here, because it's different here, and I'm not a preacher, but we'll have grown men get up. "Hey, you want a cup of coffee?" You know, "Hey, go get me a cup of Cokes over there." Okay, that's different. I got no problem with that. Let's accept each other that way. But you understand, I was watching, and I'm not telling. I don't tell. Who made this peppermint stuff with the chocolate? It was in this plate.
It's Ashley. She's teaching.
Oh, Ashley's teaching. Kyle, you're Ashley. Did this? I'm standing here. I'm over there watching, and there's two or three kids, and they're funneling this stuff in. Oh, no, 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 no. You know why they're doing that?
Good.
Because mom ain't watching. Oh, it's not because it's good, but it is good. They're doing this because they can get away with it. Mom's not watching. Because if mom had been standing there, if Ashley had been right here, or if the mamas had been right here, I can't tell you, I don't know. There were kids here, I didn't recognize them. But there were kids standing right here. They were just shoveling it in. Nah, nah, nah. If their mom had been standing there, what would they have done? "Mother, can I have a piece, please?" They'd have put on that act. Nah, they were shoveling it in, not because it's good, because it was good, but because mom wasn't there to control, right? That's how Jesus accepted children, because they were children. He understood that. The second thing he did, it says he took them in his arms. He held them. He patted them. Scratched their backs, patted their cheeks, rubbed their hands, held their hands, rubbed their arms. He touched them. Now, we live in a world that has gone so warped in that view. Some of us are scared to have natural, just mother and father instinctive affection for children. But the children in your family need that. Especially if they're in a situation where they're not getting it. So accept them. And then the last thing he says, it said he blessed them. I love that word. But now, what we've learned, what we've seen in religious stuff is, bless them is like you see the religious leaders. "Bless you, my child. Bless you, my child. Bless you, my child." Uh-uh. You know what the word means? It means to say good things to. Why we pick at little kids, I never will understand. Children are not able to understand sarcasm. Now you can train them that way. And you'll think, "Well, my kids do." Mm-mm. I'm telling you, until they reach their teen years, mentally, emotionally, they're not able to understand abstract thought. So stop sarcasm. Especially with the children in your family. Start saying kind things to them. Now, it's going to take a little bit to turn that ship around. But you're not trying to turn the ship around. You're just trying to change the focus of the day. Be nice to them. Take your nephew, your niece, your cousin, your second cousin, whatever they are when they are that age. And even if they're not allowed to be cousins until they're 12. Take them. Show them some affection and then say kind things to them. Be nice. Say please. Say thank you. Say nice things to them. Let them be loved like Jesus. Start with children if you can't do it with anybody else. All right. The D is a don't and a do. Don't. Follow your impulses. Don't follow your impulses. Proverbs, and that's why I had to turn to Proverbs earlier. Our time is out, so I've got to just shut it off and you let you read it. But read Proverbs 12, Proverbs 14, Proverbs 16, and Proverbs 18. 12, 14, 16, and 18. Those four chapters, look for the word seems. And every time, here's the conclusion of it. There's a way that seems right to a man, but that doesn't work out for what's best. All your life, in America, we've just almost been trained. Well, if it feels right, man, follow your heart. Now, Disney did that to us. Disney taught us to follow our hearts, follow our dreams. Our songs teach us, follow your heart. Well, I just want to be true to my heart. Your heart is deceitful. Your heart's not what you follow. It's advice from the Lord. And He'll say, there's a way that seems right, but the wise man listens to advice. So the wise man lets the Lord tell him how to. That's that taking that thought captive. Well, Lord, I'm really mad. I just want to go off on these people. Don't. Do not explode in a family gathering, think you're going to help the family. Because guess what happens when you do? You just feed the beast and you just perpetuate the cycle. No, go the other way. Instead of don't do that, here's some things to do. And there's just one big to-do thing. You know what the do is? Do whatever you think Jesus would do in that moment. Do what you think Jesus would do in that moment. Early in my Christian life, as an adult, I read the book In His Steps, and that's where they started the whole thing of what would Jesus do. A few years ago, they made it some slogan, had wristbands and posters and bumper stickers and stuff, and initial, you know, WWJD, and made it a fad rather than a function, rather than a lifestyle, rather than a faith. I got no bumper stickers, and I've got no bracelets. I got no special little codes. Try it. Try it in your family or whoever you're with this holiday. Try it. Just try asking yourself, what does Jesus want me to do toward this guy? What would Jesus want me to do toward this one? And it's simple things, folks. If everybody's doing something and you don't feel comfortable doing it, don't feel welcome, instead of sitting there pouting, go serve them. Do what Jesus would do. That's what He would do. Go wash the dishes without making an announcement. I think I'll go wash the dishes. No. Without having me asked. Take out the trash. How about give up your chair for somebody so they can have a chair? I don't know all the things, but how about just trying to be like Jesus would be? That's a pretty good do to do. What would Jesus do if He was here right now? If He was me right now, what would He do? Now, it's real easy for us to say, well, my mother should have done this, my dad should have done this, my brother should have done... We're not about keeping score. It's not about them. It's about us. What are we going to do? And let's do like Jesus would do. All right, last one. Maybe the biggest one. Expectations may be the destroyer of most holidays and probably the most relationships. expectations. People get in their head how they ought to be treated, and when they're not treated that way, they don't know what to, how to react, and so they react badly. Don't put expectations on other people on how they're going to treat you. Put the expectations on you. Put the expectations on you. Expect you to be like Jesus. Expect you to be the mature person. Expect you to be the compassionate one. Expect you to be the accepting and loving and caring one. Expect you to be the one that's willing to suffer for the sake of the family. Sometimes we start suffering and we want to make sure everybody knows that they're not treating us right. When what really needs to happen sometimes is just suffer for the family's sake. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go back. Doesn't mean you can't leave early. I'm just saying stop putting expectations on them on how they're going to... Well, they should have been nicer to me. They should have been better to me. They should have done this with me. You're not in charge of them, okay? You are not the boss. You're the only boss of you. You are your own boss. So expect expectations on nobody but yourself. And expect from yourself to be the best you can be. To be the best Jesus you can be. To be the best son, daughter, brother, sister, aunt, uncle, cousin, mother, dad, grandma, grandpa that you can be. Okay? I had an email from my granddaughter. I wanted to read it to you and my phone deleted it. I've got a new phone and so sometimes it deletes stuff. I'm sure I punched the wrong button, but my granddaughter wrote me after all of my mess started. We started a new family tradition. And families who've gone through trauma, I always recommend that. Start a family a new tradition. And if you want to change the cycle, you can do that. Change it. Change your tradition. We did. We changed to Papa Claus. We decided to start having what's called Papa Claus. And my grandchildren, is mainly for them, they sing... Here comes Papa Claus. They do all the songs and stuff. They just put Papa Claus in there. Well, my granddaughter, and really when it comes to Papa Claus, it's not about money because I don't spend it. We don't have it, so I don't spend it. It's not about lots of presents. It's about the family being together and Papa makes breakfast for them and we have some stockings and that kind of stuff. We have a big time for a couple or three or four too many days. I mean, a bunch of days, all right? This year, my 8-year-old, the baby, 8-year-old granddaughter sent me an email. That astounded me. I didn't know about email till I was 48, much less 8. But I get an email from her iPod. This is an 8-year-old sending her papa an email from her iPod that said, "Papa, this year's Papa Claus was the best ever." Now, folks, how many can she remember? She's 8. She probably remembers 2, 3 of them best. But this was the best one ever. And one of the things I loved the best was she said, "And I know you love me." There it is. I don't know. I have no idea what gift she got. But I know she got the gift I wanted her to get. Because she repeated something she hears me say every time I see her. She said, "I know you love me wherever I am." And I usually say, "Wherever you are and whatever you do, Papa's going to love you." Well, she repeated at least a part of that in that email. That's why I wanted to keep it. But I wanted you to hear it because she got the gift I wanted. Some of you don't have any extra. Boy, you talking about understanding that, I understand that. And God's blessed me and I have a little bit of extra now, but I can remember when what I gave the first Papa Claus, I went through my dresser drawer of old t-shirts that I'd been given over the years from colleges and youth rallies and things where I'd spoken, and they got old t-shirts. That was Papa Claus. That, it's not the money. And I know you feel pressure, and some of you feel like your kids aren't going to have a Christmas unless you spend money. That's not true, y'all. That's just not true. Don't put yourself under that kind of pressure. Have you seen the commercial? And I sorry to drag this out, but it impressed me. You've seen the commercial. It's about some high-tech the cloud thing where you flip on this and you see your family on the TV and they can see all that. Don't forget the commercial. Pay attention to the message. They show this little boy. He's the toy that his granddad gave him is sitting on the floor doing nothing. It's some high-tech car gizmo kind of thing, electronic deal. The little boy that's supposed to be playing with the car is inside a pasteboard box stuck over his head, and he's walking around bouncing it, banging into furniture and stuff. And the granddad says, I worry about that boy. I know you put pressure on yourselves to make sure that they have a better Christmas than last year. I hate that. I know that feeling. I hate that. I don't know what gifts my granddaughter got, really. I don't know. I can't even remember now what I put in her stocking or what we bought her to go in her stocking. I'm blank. But I know she got the gift I wanted her to get most. Make sure they do that. I don't know that you're going to get a gift, but don't go with the expectation of getting. Give your family. Give someone in the family. Especially give the children, if nobody else. Give them the gift that you want them to have. Even if it's not one they unwrap under the tree. That makes sense? I can't wait to see my mom and dad Saturday morning. We do it the right way. We unwrap our packages and stuff on Christmas Day. Those of you who do it on Christmas Eve, we'll pray for you, but that's just the way it is, you know. But we'll drive up Saturday morning, and I look forward to seeing them. In fact, I'm going out to see them tomorrow to kind of get revved up. I look forward to seeing them. And my brothers that'll come, I look forward to seeing them. Even the in-laws, I look forward to seeing them. I look forward to seeing the grandkids and all the great-grandkids that belong to my mom and dad. I look forward to seeing them, see how they've grown, and hearing all those stories. I love the thought of it, especially the cakes and pies. I love all of that. But I know, because I know you, there's some people in here that are not looking forward to it. And I hate that for you. I'm sorry for you. And if you don't have to go, and if it's going to damage you, don't. But if you have to go, if you can't keep from going, you go prepared. Okay? Go to give, not to get. And give them something maybe they've never seen before. Give them what Jesus would want them to have. Inside you, to them. That'll be the gift you really want them to have, right? Let's pray. Father, thank you for today. And I've got to say, God, thank you for my family. Thank you for my mother, my dad, my brothers, sister-in-laws, children, grandchildren. Thank you for nieces and nephews, aunts, uncles, the way you've blessed my life, all my life with my family. Thank you. But in this room, God, there are people who don't know anything about that. They've never had that kind of joy. They've never had that kind of peace. They've never had that kind of just fun, that kind of pleasure in family. And God, I pray that you protect them. Do not let... We'll protect them. Surround them, God. Hover over them. Build a hedge around them. Don't let anybody damage them. Physically or emotionally. And God, would you give us all the strength, starting with me, give us all the strength to be like Jesus when we go home and to give our families the gift they need most, a chance to get to know Jesus by seeing Him in us. Safe trips, God, for please. We want everybody to be able to come back here, safe and happy. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, y'all.
I left that jacket in my house.
You just want to? Okay.
Thank you.